Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Affordable Housing Collaborative Meeting for Thursday, October 27th, 7 p.m. here at the wonderful Town Hall Planning Board office. We'll do our roll call and I'll start. Christian Blaney, present.
Joe Murphy, representative from the Planning Board, present.
Callie Babbitt Spears, present.
George Helwig, present.
Megan Sparks, present.
And Brian Wagner for the Planning Department.
Phenomenal. Did everyone get a chance to take a look at the minutes? And if yes, does anybody have any notes or things to change or make any edits to?
No. Move to accept the minutes.
Can I get a motion to accept the minutes?
Yeah.
George, get a second.
Second.
I think I screw this up every time. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Public comments. I kind of thought, what's his name, might show up again tonight. What's the kid's name? Josh? That made it pretty interesting. All right.
Can you join this board if you are not, you know, say you're a URI student and you live here year round? Could you do that?
That's a good question. I think you have to be a registered town resident, right?
I think you have to be a town resident, and I believe they check the voter rolls for that determination.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
That would make sense.
So if you're registered to vote in South Kingstown, yes.
Okay. You can. Yeah.
And that's just for discussion later.
All right, so no new business. We're back to old business, and we're looking at the educational outreach portion. Last week, I had submitted something you guys passed around, and I think we relatively gave it a thumbs up. But Brian, were you going to touch it up or something, or have somebody take a peek at it, or are we compiling them first that we're going to do? We're going to compile like three or four before we submit them for release?
I've been a little busy with other things, but I did meet with the director of administration on getting stuff out on Facebook, so I'm clear on what needs to be done. I just need to format that stuff, because all he's going to do is post it. So I just need to put it in a format that can go up on the web.
So I think everybody had a topic, and we chatted about some of that stuff, but I believe you guys were going to bring in at least some...
Actually, I thought I sent something.
Oh, you already sent
it? I got something from you, and I had the one from you. And Christian, you...
I handed mine in at the last meeting.
Yes, at the meeting, so...
I also handed something in.
Okay.
Perfect idea.
Very good.
Yeah, so I can get... I will get those out next week. I got...
That's great.
Really buried in preparing for a historic district seminar and then spent another week digging out from underneath all this stuff.
That's what happens, right?
Yeah.
No worries. No, this is good. We're making some headway on the education part. That's good. And we'll set those up to go like one a month or something, right? Is that the sort of the idea? Or one every couple of weeks?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no reason why we can't feed them out and recycle them over time so that they come to the top of the feed more than once.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
That makes
because,
sense.
You know, people are only going to scroll down a little bit, and if they don't see anything that interests them, they'll move on. We need to try and keep it.
And add to it, right?
Yeah.
All right, excellent.
Can you put something on the bottom of each one saying we need... members, if you'd like to.
Do
you have an interest?
Well, I'm going to do one that says we need members and that we're looking for assistance from anybody who's interested, you know, particularly if you have a background in the issue. Certainly everybody seems to be in agreement that there is a housing issue. So hopefully there are other people out there.
Not going to lose that argument with anybody, that's for sure. Okay. All right, so B, attracting affordable housing development. Oh, so this is our ongoing discussion about how to make the development of affordable housing a more attractive option for developers. And this was sort of bounced off of Joe's conversation from when we were over at the rec center, right? And I know the charge, I believe, was to take a look at some of that stuff Brian had sent out to us. regarding the comprehensive plan.
Requirements under the comprehensive plan versus the requirements under the town's inclusionary zoning regs, and trying to see if there's some win-win opportunities that would allow the maybe encourage the developer to use the incentive plan instead of the comprehensive, and it somehow resulting in something that's more beneficial to the developer as well as more beneficial as far as getting additional housing units.
Yeah, I think the overarching question is what carrots can we hang out there to get people interested in developing affordable housing?
Yeah.
Or how, you know, what other actions could the town take? Yeah, I keep wondering about the viability of tax foreclosure properties. If people have defaulted on their taxes and we're going to take them anyway, you know, is there a way to make them available for affordable housing development?
Yeah, that's a good thought.
That would be great. Hmm. How often does that happen?
I think it probably happens more frequently than you know.
Okay.
I think a lot depends on where the house stands in terms of its mortgage as to what happens, because it, a mortgagee is not going to allow the town to take it if there's a large mortgage owed on it. They'll pay off the taxes and sell the house.
Yeah. Is there... Could we reach out to someone to find out per year how many actually get foreclosed on?
Yeah, I guess we can get that information through the assessor's
office.
The
tax assessor? Okay, that would be interesting.
100 years ago, we were talking about, and this is when we were originally doing the ADU stuff. Joey might remember some of this. We were saying that if we ever had a fund with money in it, that two halfway decent uses could be to set up programs for if you are in tax trouble or if your house is in severe disrepair, that you could apply for help here. But the flip side would be, you know, you would be deed restricting your house affordable as sort of the repayment of, you know, of that. This is back when Rob was leading the group, so this is quite a long time ago, and it was just something that was kicking around, and it was, part of it was because Jen Kruger had put together a list of like 3 or 4 houses locally where she knew people that lived there, that she knew that they owned the homes, but they really were, I believe they were elderly, and they just couldn't repair them, they didn't have family locally,
mm-hmm.
and she said, what's the type of thing that we could do, and is there an opportunity to both help them and also, you know, turn the homes into, you know, affordable, so... I'm just throwing it out there because that was something that we talked about that kind of went nowhere.
That sounds like a good idea, too.
I think there was some question about, and if remembering, the questions were, you know, if you're doing that, we have to be careful because, you know, really when you're having a person, you know, deed restrict their home, you're also limiting, you know, that equity of their own, of their, that piece that they own. If that's their one item of value, you know, their one giant piece of equity, you know, what's the sort of the fine line there? And the counter argument was, well, the house is collapsing or they're going to lose it, you know, because they're behind on taxes. You know, maybe there's a happy medium there. So, although you have to have money in the fund.
Right. I think a program like that is something that we would need to get input from legal counsel on.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
I see lots of opportunities for people to claim that the town is taking advantage of people in bad situations to try and get their house.
Yeah, and that was, we talked about that.
And make it available for affordable housing. So that, I think there are image issues there, and we would really have to do a lot of lifting on educating the person about just exactly what they're signing up on. do that. I think the other thing that you ran into was that there was a discussion about counting those houses as affordable, you know, state recognized affordable units, and there we stumbled over that somehow. But it may be that initially when you do the program, it's not. But the minute you sell that house with a deed restriction on it, it should count, because the deed restriction, the requirements of the deed restriction will kick in.
And, I mean, if the, assuming that the person who needs it is going to fall into a low to moderate income category, couldn't it start right away? I mean, if
it could, it could. But if the person doesn't qualify and deed restricts the house to get money, we could, you know, it could be sort of a deferred deed restriction. So the deed restriction, the timing on it doesn't start to run until they sell the property.
Never had allergies. Till I got older.
Yeah. Well, I think, and the conversation started because we were looking at, you know, the reality of trying to build out of this is, I mean, it really can't happen, right? I mean, you can't. We're not going to build. There's not going to be enough new construction, especially at the rate that we're going to create the other 600 plus units that we need to reach the 10%, right? No. So the sort of line of thinking that we were trying to do creatively was, all right, so let's look at existing housing stock and what type of stuff can we do. That's where the ADU thing came from. I mean, as wonderfully successful as it's been, we had even one person apply for the application. I don't know. But that was the thought process, was let's look at existing stock as opposed to thinking about building new just because for that reason.
Yeah, I'm not aware that there's been a big rush to the ADU.
Not, does anybody like a line out the door here?
Certainly, certainly nobody. There's been no interest in the cottages.
I think there's interest, but like where the price of building is just so high right now. It just doesn't.
I think we passed it right. It was like right when COVID hit, and then everything's, you know, gotten more expensive.
Because I talked to a bunch of people who build and actually have land, and they want to do it. And it's just the price to build is so high that they just can't make it happen.
Well, I think even Peter DiStefano has said on the planning board that it's not necessarily the square footage. It's that every unit has to have a kitchen and a bathroom and all the fixtures, and those are the real expensive things.
Yeah.
You can add square footage around those less expensively.
That's what they say. It's just as expensive to build a colonial as it is to build a ranch, basically, because everything's in the first floor, and then you're just putting bedrooms up. I mean, that's what a lot of developers will say that for that exact reason. Yeah, because Peter just did a really nice, he did a nice tiny home that he was putting out on Facebook.
Peter?
Yeah.
Where was that?
He was in the Southern Rhode Island magazine with an ADU that he had built.
Yeah. It was nice, but didn't it cost like $250,000 or something?
It was 650 square feet, and it was like $550,000.
Okay.
I think it was over $800 a square foot.
Oh my God.
But he, you know, it was a higher end, but it was still very pricey.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Peter has said that several times. I don't necessarily agree with it completely. I think there's some element to it. I mean, you certainly can make a small house cost as much as a large house. But if you use the same type of windows, it's going to be how many windows you buy. If you use the same type of, you know, flooring, it's going to be how much flooring do you need. So, and there's certain elements like the kitchen, but usually on a smaller house, a kitchen would be smaller. So I think if you compare very similar materials, it's going to be very much influenced by the size of the house.
Yeah.
You know, but yes, you can make a small house be more expensive or as expensive as a large house. You know?
I spoke to the guys in Jamestown that started the container home company. It's called, but they actually don't use container homes anymore. They steel frame the buildings themselves, because he said getting the container homes proved to be more expensive than actually just building a steel frame.
Well, with the supply chain issues right now,
they're all on ships. The containers.
Well, the problem is they're not all on ships. They're all offshore someplace. You know, they wind up at the end of a run, and you can't get them back.
And their stuff, yeah.
So yes, containers are a hot value thing right now. It wasn't like it was 5 years ago where you could find them
anywhere
for nothing.
Yeah. But even those homes were costing about, he said, it's, you know, because it's really between 90 and 100,000 for, and those are modular, so some issues with modular, right, with, because we've got some rules where, I asked you a question at one point, Brian, you had sent me back the specifics on it. I think it was because it was a container, we had some issues with allowing those on properties here.
No, I talked to the building official about it. We did have issues with it in our ordinance in Coventry where I used to work. Here, the building official says, I don't really care what you make it out of. It's what are you using it for?
Yeah.
And if you're using a shipping container for a house, then it's a house.
I thought there was some kind of issue with it being on blocks or something, because the information you sent me back was definitely a no. Yeah, maybe it's got to be on a foundation. Because the information you had sent me back initially was definitely a no, but I can't remember what the reason was. I think it was because they were putting them on blocks or something, maybe.
The other issue you might run into with that is it might preclude you from doing FHA housing, that you'd have to know if HUD would approve it.
Oh, yeah.
And FHA is a big affordability product. So
when we go going back to that, where we comparing the inclusionary zoning versus comprehensive permit, trying to figure out ways where we can make the inclusionary zoning maybe more beneficial. What I think about is that both the comprehensive plan and the inclusionary requires that the house be, you know, compatible in size and scale and that type of stuff. Which, again, I think I'm an advocate for affordable housing. I think that's good when the builder is building, you know, a ranch house for $400,000 or raised ranch, whatever, and making those affordable housings basically compatible. But I think when the development's a very expensive neighborhood, it may be beneficial to both the builder and the town, maybe to allow the affordable housing to be not quite as elaborate, but then get more units. So, you know, I'm thinking of like, let's say there's a development going in and there's a bunch of single families and the developer's required to build three. Maybe instead of three, we allow them to build two duplexes and get four units. You know, I'm just, those are the types of things. Those are the types of things that I think maybe if we gave options to, you know, then there's always the, you know, the question of maybe offsite or him walted up some alternate means. As long as we get more units, you know, maybe we could just draft language that allows them to provide proposals which result in more units will be, you know, weighed by the planning board, the affordable housing, or whatever.
What about if a developer bought existing units rather than built new units? What if part of it was they could, I mean, of course, that's hard to time because there's no houses.
You know, if we're going into that missing middle and they're going to buy, you know, a larger house and convert it into a multiple apartments instead of just, you know, all apartments being the same, maybe get two affordable and a little smaller, you know. That's, and I don't know how to do those that language, but maybe some type of language in inclusionary zoning that allows them to, you know, not be compatible, to provide alternative means that meets the objectives of the town, resulting in more affordable units.
I mean, we do have language that allows for off-site at the discretion of the planning board.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think that it's kind of a cold fish reaction, but if I'm taking an existing market rate building and turning it into affordable, I'm at least increasing the percentage of affordable units in the house. I'm not in the town. I'm increasing the ratio, but not increasing the overall number of units, unfortunately. I don't necessarily see the problem with that, but I do think it's something that you need to evaluate on a case-by-case basis.
Well, now, with the language that's now, it would have to be compatible, I would think, right? That's one of the...
I mean, it doesn't allow a developer to go buy, let's say, a four-unit apartment building, let those be as four rental units, and then still get an incentive on single families. I think the planning board would argue against that pretty...
and I think that's part of the planning board's discretion in determining whether an off-site project is going to be permitted.
But a lot of it would come down to what's the language in the regulations. So if the language says that they're supposed to be compatible and, you know, similar size and that type of stuff, and then the developer may propose that, but then we would say, you know, is it compatible? How are you going to make sure it's compatible? You're building three bedroom units. Each apartment has to be three bedroom. And we'd have pretty good grounds to force that issue if the regulations said they have to be compatible in similar size, et cetera. If we looked at maybe changing the language, which would allow them to maybe do something that's less than compatible in exchange for more units,
yeah,
you know, then that might, or, you know, I think that might, then that might, the developer would know that it's not a one-for-one. He could maybe, and it may encourage the developer as well as kind of give the planning board some leeway to, I don't know.
I think the trick is going to be developing the objective standard for what that trade-off is.
Yeah. It will be.
Because if you leave it sort of a completely subjective determination at the discretion of the planning board, now you open yourself up to all kinds of litigation that they favored this guy and didn't favor that guy, and
it's tough to rubric that. In theory, I love the idea of being, you know, I'm a builder and I'm going to do Matuna Beach condos, and you guys tell me, well, you know what, you can do four affordable units, and they don't have to be locally. I mean,
I'm looking to buy. Better if you could move them closer to the. To the center of town, so that there's also
they're not grouped
access
together.
To jobs and
in a perfect world, I buy four houses in town, and I fix them up, and I restrict them, and now you've got four units that are not alike, and they're scattered, and they're that's one of the main purposes of it. But that would be nearly impossible.
So what would you look at? Would you look at square footage of the units? Would you look at number of bedrooms?
I would look at bedrooms.
I'd look
at bedrooms.
Yeah.
Right?
So, you know, we've tried to take that position in the planning board that the affordable have to basically be the same as the market rate. So if your market rate's at three bedrooms, your affordable has to be three bedrooms. Your market rate's at two bedrooms, your affordable. Again, that's with a one-for-one.
Do they have to be same square footage? So if you have a three-bedroom market and it's 3,000 square foot, does the affordable have to be 3,000 as well, or just has to be three bedrooms?
So it says, the regulations say compatible in size and scale.
Size and scale.
So what's compatible mean, right? So it doesn't mean it has to be exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't. It has to be that you can't. Chelsea used to say it means it has to play nice in a sandbox. I mean, they have to kind of all be homogeneous. Perfectly homogeneous.
Right.
But they all have to fit together. Right. You can't go down and say that's affordable and that one's, I can tell by the size. You know, on the, we have taken a position they're going to be the same size for the most part.
Yep.
On Alex Petucci's, because the affordable was in the same as the.
Yep.
There was a lot of discussion that had to be the same, and but the owner was going to buy one, and we finally broke down and said, okay, the owner unit could be 5% larger in case they want to add a bathroom. So it had to be within 5%.
Okay.
But I don't think there's no magic number. That was just we find that that's compatible if it's within 5%.
I mean, the language in the statute is pretty general. I'm not even sure that compatible is the best word that they could have chosen to use. But it is what it is. But no, he's right. They do not have to be identical.
Now, on the other flip side of that, on the extreme of that, a developer on North Road and over near URI had proposed to build these really big single-family houses. He was getting large density bonus because they're going to be comprehensive. And then his affordable were going to be apartments over the garage or these great big houses. And we said, no, we approved the project, but your affordable is going to be matched that. So 25% of your single family houses are.
Yep.
Well, that would be affordable, and then 25% of your rental units, apartments over garage, are, and that went. They appealed that, and it went to the SHAB, and SHAB agreed with us.
Oh, okay.
On that issue, there were some other issues they didn't agree with us.
So how's that project going?
What's that?
Is that project still moving along or no?
No, that's an older project, right?
No, that
it's done.
They, my understanding is they're going to come back in with a new design. So they appealed the decision to SHAB. They have appealed SHAB's decision to the Superior Court as a placeholder, but I think they're going to come in and start with a new subdivision design. But there was a bunch of wonky things in that. Not only were all of the affordables going to be in-law apartments, but they were going to leave it up to the individual property owners about whether or not they were going to build the apartments or not.
Wow.
So
okay.
There wasn't even a way to quantify upon approval of the development how many units were going to be or where they were going to be located.
You might not even get any of them, right?
And you might not get all of the ones you should get.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of concern from us that, somebody could buy it and then say, I don't want to rent it out. I don't want to have some family I don't know, people I don't know. I have a teenage daughter. I don't want to have somebody I don't know living in my house. So I'm not going to rent it out. I'm going to take it off the roll. And it'd be kind of hard pressed, I think, to the court to make them do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If they're renting it, yes, you have to rent it affordable. If you decide not to rent it, use it as a pool room.
But that's the thing, right? If you have an accessory unit. That sounds great. I'd like that, right? And especially if I don't have to rent it, that's just an extra space that you can get something else in.
So, anyways, but
the difficulty with doing them separately too, though, adds the whole thing with. I mean, when you're doing a development, it's difficult enough, right, to get all your plans and specs and everything. But if you're going to try and do that, and you're going to do it for three other homes, you're going to remodel. That's a whole. It's like doing four projects, right?
So, but I mean,
there'd have to be some kind of incentive for them to be able to wrap it all into one approval or something. And then there's the other part where they have to find the houses.
Right.
And they have to be available, and they have to find them all at the same time.
So I do think that there's maybe some room for, having it a little less than compatible in exchange for more units.
Yeah.
I think that's what it boils down to.
But why did they choose the comprehensive in the first place? It's mainly because the town can't step in and make recommendations and
so
stuff?
Let's say there's probably several reasons, but I tell you what I think.
Yeah.
I think there is. So you have zoning regulations which tell you what the density can be in that, right? So let's say you're in a 1-acre zoning, you got 10 acres dry land, you could build 10 houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Essentially, you can do that. Anything more than 5, 20% have to be affordable.
Okay.
So I get 10 acres. I can build 10 houses, plus I get a bonus density of 2, so now I'm going to build 12. Two of those are going to be affordable. But that's all I can build.
Right.
Now I do a comprehensive permit. I can pretty much, that whole, with the zoning regulations, I can ask for any relief for that. So I can ask for 20 houses.
So that's how
I can ask for 20 houses, half acre lot each. And unless the town can show that this is going to be unsafe or unhealthy, we pretty much have to approve it.
And now we just got 2 more towards our 600 that we need, except now our target isn't 600 anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Our overall target is not.
But so maybe we went in reverse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're getting the percentage, right?
Yeah.
We're getting double the percentage, but we're still moving the needle. It's like we're taking.
So I think it's because of the higher densities mostly.
So can we just adopt that? Why is the town opposed to adopting that? Same type of.
Why we, because it gives you to disapprove it is very hard. Not necessarily that you want to disapprove affordable housing, but you want to have some control over it. For instance, the project condos near Tunic Beach, the land there could be really sensitive. Maybe you would not want to do that if you weren't under... if it wasn't going through the comprehensive permit.
to have 12 apartments, condos there.
Okay.
So you pretty much lose control over it. Your regulations, you kind of lose control over your regulations.
From the town?
Yes, right. If you're using the inclusion, yes.
Yeah.
Well, if it's company, it's a permit, yes.
Right. Yeah.
And they're doing that specifically to try and bypass the town if they can. Right. Is that why a developer would select
they can, not that they bypass the town, but they can ask for additional relief that they probably wouldn't be considered for had they gone through a different method.
But as a town, if they're going to do that anyways, wouldn't we want to adopt sort of the same policy so that we'd have more control over it?
Well, that's what I think this whole discussion was about.
Yeah.
Do we want to change ours
that
has maybe just as much incentive for the developer, but perhaps gives us a little more control or allows us to capitalize on stuff that the comprehensive permit doesn't.
Right.
So the comprehensive permit says it has to be compatible, similar size. You're building a $1 million condo. Guess what? Affordable housing has to be, they get a $1 million condo. Maybe we don't want necessarily affordable housing to be a $1 million condo. Maybe we want two $500,000 condos instead of a $1 million condo.
Yeah.
And give additional.
Yeah.
You can't do that under the comprehensive permit.
Right.
Yeah, and like you said, you could do... So he's building houses that all look the same, but you can make one of them a duplex. Not sure how the design would work, but as long as both of those were... in other words, they could be affordable. Each unit could be affordable. And, the building itself would be compatible with every other building around, as long as they gave us the additional units. In other words, if he had three buildings, right, that had to be affordable, and we allowed them to do duplexes in those, that would make six affordable units.
That's an example. The developers will usually come in, and I think, even the most of the planning board members will tell you that the comprehensive permit, mm-hmm. right? Those requirements by the state regulations are not ideal.
Right.
There is things that don't necessarily benefit the right people,
right.
or maybe requirements that seem to go above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's kind of like, okay, they're choosing the comprehensive permit. We know there's all these errors
right.
instead of Oz. What if we chose Oz to kind of look like a comprehensive yeah. permit, but does a better job than a comprehensive permit?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let's make our regulations more attractive,
right.
and with all those things that we don't like about the comprehensive permit, let's make ours better.
Right.
That's the point.
Right. Especially because I feel like they're going to do it anyways, right? They're leaning towards that.
Right.
If we can get them to come
back. That's better.
Right.
But they'll tell you that it's not serving the right people, right?
Right.
Because it's basically income-based. So it's the retired folks coming in that sold the house that, have millions of dollars of assets that buy the affordable housing house.
But what does that mean, right people? What does that mean?
What's that?
So what does that even mean?
If you're buying an affordable unit in cash, which most people are,
yeah.
I think I've said this before, I've had clients who have gone to affordable units and they said, okay, and are you going to be paying in cash? And they do. That, to me, that's not affordable. If you can buy the house outright,
if you're sitting there with $500,000,
should be.
I don't think that's
are you
the right
not
person?
Only an income
yeah.
test,
yeah.
but
no.
an asset
There's
test.
It's not an asset test. That's
right.
the problem. Because,
right.
Yeah.
So I guess a better
yeah,
way of
is.
Talking about me expressing this is yeah. let's look at all those things that are comprehensive. They're choosing that.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at all those things that they don't necessarily like. We don't necessarily like.
Yeah.
And maybe look at changing ours so ours is just as attractive, but
yeah.
it addresses those issues.
Right.
I guess that's the...
yeah.
And I
can
do
we,
see,
can
you know,
do
I
that?
Do see more units, but maybe not quite as elaborate as one of the things that I don't like about the comprehensive permit. You know, that I think that it should allow that type of stuff.
Yeah, but there should be some sort of an asset limit.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're not reaching the people that truly need the assistance.
That might be a little harder to write into your regulations.
Of course, it is.
You can't really
who's
buying
or
not buying it, but you know.
Although
there are,
the HUD does that, so
yeah.
There's a way of doing that.
Exactly, it's managed after the fact as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because
Wait, did you say it's managed after the fact?
Yeah, it's...
But is it really?
I don't know. That's my question.
I don't think,
well,
from what I've heard, I don't
did,
think there are people are following up to see what's going on with them Anyway, yep. So you sell it, and then there you go. I don't think that there's enough manpower to see what's going on and who's living.
Don't they have to register? The apartments do it every year. Do the housing, does a, if you own a house, do they, do they get
registered and check those every no, year? Because no, I don't think there's a requirement.
I don't think so, no.
I think as you, if you qualify when you went in, you don't have to re-qualify.
Exactly. Only when you go to sell it. When you go to sell it, you need to then go through the whole process again.
What I was going to say is if you took assets.
But they don't even do they even check that the person's still living there?
No.
See, I don't know who. I did very. I called Narragansett, and there's another. There's a nonprofit that does supposedly monitoring the
community housing land trust.
Right. And basically, it sounded like they, you know, take basically what's reported to them, and you know, but don't really test it. I couldn't see any way they did anyway. I couldn't get any answers.
See, I mean, there's so many things where it breaks down. You know, that's a concern for me where you have, let's say, a developer that's building a duplex. That's the back half is for rental. And now he decides he wants to sell it. You get somebody that qualifies, buys it because they have cash. And then if nobody checks on it, they could just rent it out full market price. Mm-hmm. I guess you're relying on the neighbors to get somebody turning you in.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, I drive by this house in town, which was sold affordable, and I know it was sold affordable. They have put probably $200,000 into this house. I mean, they have added an addition. They have done stonework. They've done everything, and I find it mind-boggling because it's just
do they do the work themselves?
I think we're just ranting. You probably need to really listen and turn it into some type of action.
So they put all that money into it, but they're going to have to sell it again as an affordable when they leave it.
Yeah, but what if the deed restriction? There's only 10 years left on the deed restriction.
Right. No, I get it.
So from my perspective,
last person holding the bag gets a
right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And like those Matunic Beach ones, I look at those and I think like, okay, these are a great deal, right? If you can come in, have a beautiful house right there, pay all cash.
Well, that's and I think part of the issue of making the properties like, you run into this. I've only done one affordable mortgage only because it was the developer I was working with and the development was across the street from the bank. And they were building McMansions and they had to make three of them affordable, you know. And so one of the clients, and they were very nice people, but they were old folks. And they had like $5 million in retirement, you know.
And did they pay cash?
They put like half down. But they only drew on their investments. They only drew like $5,000 a month or something, you know. And I didn't even know it was an affordable. They didn't even tell me it was an affordable unit until we got well into the process and did the deed search. And I called the agent. I was like, "What's going on here?"
Yeah.
You know. And he's like, "It's an affordable unit." And I said at that time, "I'm like, well, I don't think we can do it. They've got too much money." And he said,
"Not just on that income."
He said they do it just on the income.
So what I see a lot on the planning board is the developer will get up and tell us that there's all these. Problems with the comprehensive permit, and you guys are making us do it. And of course, we're saying we're not making you do it. We're trying to follow the law. This is not our requirement. This is a state comprehensive.
Right. Right. And you chose to do that.
So we cannot change the regulations state. As far as you know at the comprehensive permit. What we can do though is we can make our regulations change that be more of an incentive for the developer, so they choose those.
Right.
So,
all right. So what kind of action items can we get out of this? Let's think about that. I
think we need to read these. You've sent them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we resend them?
I can do that.
Okay.
Thank you for asking him that.
Because no, I feel like I need to read them. I'll be honest, I haven't read them. I think I need to read them, and if we can all come up with some maybe points that are potential.
Yeah. Based on this conversation, because it's fresh in our minds.
So now you understand, yeah. We can't change the states. We can do is we could change ours and make them better than the states.
Can you give us an idea of what the builders are saying, though, that they're having a problem?
I mean, maybe you could do this as part of this process if you wanted to.
Maybe we bring in some builders
and say, hey, if we could change ours, what would make this more incentive and still allow us to get these? Right? I mean, they could open it up to builders and discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot more sense, because I don't have a, even if I read that, I wouldn't have a feeling for what the builders are saying the problems are.
Of course, the builders are going to try to figure out, don't make me do this at all, let me get the...
Well, of course.
Yeah.
How many builders do we actually, I just know of that one. I mean, how many builders do we have who are coming in and actually building in the town?
No, you got what's his name? The guys that are building down in Matunic.
Who are they?
It's like DeSisto or something. DeSisto?
DeStefano?
DeStefano?
No.
DeSimone?
Dagas.
Something like that. He's building a big...
Oh, DeSimone. Okay, DeSimone. He's building
a big one on East Ave and Westerly right now. Condo development where there's affordable housing.
Okay. DeSimone. Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is...
And Hallberg. Hallberg's always building.
I'm not going to circulate the state comprehensive permit because it's a lot to read and digest. I'll send you the inclusionary zoning ordinance, which is our local requirement, and I'll just sort of lay out the distinctions because it's kind of similar.
Okay.
So the main distinctions are state comprehensive permit makes you build 25% affordable housing.
Right.
We only make 20% affordable mm-hmm. housing. When you do the state program, you get to sidestep most
all of the board's
zoning mm-hmm. requirements mm-hmm. to reasonable limits. With inclusionary, you still have to comply with all of the normal zoning requirements.
Yeah. So it takes much longer.
And the comprehensive permit, you don't have to go in front of the zoning board.
Right.
It's one-stop shop
for
the planning board.
So you just go to planning, and
it's
then you're ready to go.
It's all handled by planning.
So there's a piece of property that just came on the market in South Kingstown on Old Post Road, maybe. I think it's on for $800,000. It's
12 acres.
You know that one.
I saw it.
Okay, so could you... So if I did comprehensive permit on that, I could come in and it's... Maybe you could do 5 houses as it is now because I think the zoning is 2 acres.
2 acres zoning.
Right, so you could do 5, maybe 4. If I did comprehensive, I could come in and do...
Half acre
20?
Zoning.
Could I do R10 zoning?
You could request it. You could try.
Yeah.
You could try.
I think if you did something... particularly aggressive like that,
yep.
a lot would depend on what are you doing with your subdivision layout.
Okay.
Because if you're clustering the development close together and leaving buffers around the edges
yep.
to buffer your neighbors,
yeah.
you know, nobody may care about it.
Right.
And you're entitled to it under the comprehensive permit process.
Okay.
Is it all dry?
No, I think there's some wetlands in the back. I don't know. I mean, I just saw it on...
So it's listed in my office, actually. So I asked my boss the other day, and he said he thought it was pretty buildable.
I'm just curious.
That side of... Because it's on the north side of Route 1.
Okay.
It's not on the south side of
yeah.
Route 1.
Yeah, how many...
So
it's over near Perryville.
16, I think.
I understand. In New Hampshire, the way we counted wetlands... they weren't counted in the buildable land.
That's the same way here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so it has to be...
Land suitable for development.
Yeah, yeah. If you need 10 acres, you have to have 10 acres of dry land, even if it's on
right.
a 50-acre
so
site.
The wetlands,
it has to be contiguous. Contiguous and
the
not...
The wetlands don't count.
Right.
They're not buildable. The wetland buffers...
Does count.
You
does
do
count.
Count.
Yeah, okay.
Even though you can't build on it.
Right.
But you still...
Right,
count.
But you could
still
use
counts.
That
it
as
still
a
counts
buffer.
For your Yale plan.
Yeah,
yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And any easements, utility easements, and that type of stuff, I don't believe are land suitable for development, so they would also be subtracted out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to circle back. So Brian's going to send us the inclusionary
right.
zoning and a few
I'll try and highlight a couple of the different sections that you might want to look at. You know, there is a section in here, it's referred to as an off-site exaction. So when you do your affordables someplace else other than what you're developing, you know, take a look at that. Because there are some things in there about when the planning board can approve that sort of thing, and where they can approve it, because it says, you know, we want you to put it in the main transportation corridors of the town and whatnot. But, you know, look at that. And, you know, think about other trade-offs that we could do with this that would get us, you know, more housing that would have some appeal to somebody.
I think we have to look at it creatively. And yes. Then the second step is, we have the benefit of not being developers, but the second step, I think you're right, is to bring, if we can get somebody in for one of the meetings, maybe at the beginning of the year or something, would be great to say, okay, here's some ideas we have. Yep. Does any of this make any sense to you, or is it applicable?
And when you think you come up with a great idea, when you think you come up with a great idea, take a break and then come back to it and think about how you could abuse that idea.
Yeah, because you have to think. Because that's what's happening, right? Okay. Does that make sense to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know, so just to go back to what Megan said on that, you know, that land issues as an example, maybe you want to change the regulations that if it's 2 acre, you allow a higher density, you know, in order to get more units than just the minimum 20% or something, right? So not in R10, I think that would be grossly out of, you know, to the neighboring. But, you know, in 1 acre, maybe not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We just have to come up with a way to build things at a lower price point.
I do think that's what it comes down to.
That is, and I think about that a lot because I think if you can come up with some way of doing that, you could make a lot of money and make
Boxable. Have you seen that company, Boxable?
Love it. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I just ran across that this weekend. Yeah.
And I do think that, yeah, if regardless of the early conversation, a little house is much as bigger. I do think smaller is in the future.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people want smaller, less maintenance, less yard, less everything. I think that's attractive to a lot of people.
It's too bad, and I think it's some of the timing, and I think it's some of the land not being available for the cottage zoning. I think that's kind of a, you know, neat to be downtown and have a nice little cottage with a nice little center courthouse and courtyard. I mean, I think that's kind of attractive personally.
Yeah,
especially if you're more about your lifestyle than where you live.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to walk and.
So I actually met with her the other day, and we were talking about that, and she really still wants to do it. She just can't. The price of building is kind of. You know, so if we could find her grants, find money, find some of that stuff to bring down the price, she would do it in a heartbeat. But I think that's... Didn't we talk about that? Trying to find resources with to help people, builders, give them resources to help find potentially money out there.
Yeah, we talked about that being one of our... You know, how do you make an affordable house affordable?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you build affordable house affordable?
Yeah, because there are a lot of grants. There was that site acquisition grant, but I know that's not around anymore. But
it's hard to wrap your head around that stuff right now, especially because the house prices are ridiculous. You know, the mortgage
building
grants are ridiculous. Everything is so out of whack right now for various reasons.
But I mean, mortgage rates, not if you look at, you know, history, they're not that out of whack.
No, but the prices were...
Yeah. Prices are just...
It's affordable.
The prices haven't come down to level it out just yet.
Yeah.
And I don't see it happening.
Neither do
I. Not unless materials and services become a lot less.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good luck with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the rates are what they were in 98 when my wife and I bought our first house. Except the difference is that house was $119,000.
Right.
You know? I mean, and it's nowhere near that. You know, it's just...
Some of it's the workforce too, right? You don't have enough plumbers, electricians. You just don't have enough people competing against each other in those trades.
Right, I'm going to commute us to member recruitment because we're destitute. does anybody have friends or family? Is anybody willing to post on Facebook or I mean, we really need to get at least one more person in, because if one of us can't make it, and I can't make it at the next one, we'll talk about that next.
Okay.
We can't have a meeting, so I guess that's where we're sort of at that level. The other groups in town have such a hard time keeping people.
I mean, the Historic District Committee has gone through its share of struggles. It's doing pretty good right now, but I'm expecting to lose two at the end of the year.
Do they want to jump over here?
was that your meeting right before this one?
Yeah. I know that the chair is stepping down to take care of an older family member. And I have another member who has sort of been a perpetual no-show and has talked about stepping down, but hasn't yet. And maybe a third member who has also expressed interest in stepping
down. I just didn't know if it was an overall volunteering thing or if it was just...
I think that is part of it.
Yeah.
That is part of it. The commissions that I'm on in Narragansett, struggle at times. It's some of the non-high profile boards like this one. So I'm on the Conservation Commission in Narragansett, and we've gone through periods of time where we're down two and three members. It's just not a high profile activity.
I like the idea of making one of the posts a desperate plea for members.
Yeah.
even if it's simple, you know, did you know we have an affordable housing committee? It's a big issue. We need people, you know,
with ideas,
that kind of thing. Yeah. Just to get something.
Oh, whatever.
8:30. My kids are coming home from football. I just didn't know how much time we had left.
We're kind of at the end of the agenda.
That's a quick one.
But yeah, I'll be getting some of those Facebook things out next week.
And I have some contact information to add to the the education for financial literacy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can email a snapshot of her information.
That works.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you guys want to try and see if we could pick a different day other than the Wednesday, December 7th? Or I know December's rough. We had a hard time picking that day, so, and I apologize, I had something that came up. But, I got Brian all confused because I told him I couldn't make him the 7th, and then I meant this one. But
that's a tough time. It is a tough time of the year.
I know, it's tough because there's like Christmas parties and all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah, let me just...
Or would we rather just come fresh with January?
For me, that would probably be easier.
It'd probably be easier for me, too, to be honest with you. We can come right in January, and first thing we can do is elect new members.
Yes.
I mean, elect new officers.
Okay. Okay, wait, so did we come... Wait, what is the date?
It was December 7th.
But yeah. We're not doing it.
But we're not going to... I can't make it, so...
But we're picking a new date, right? Or no, we're canceling.
I think we're not.
I think, yeah. Okay, so we're not meeting again until January.
January, yeah. So this will be the last one for the year today.
But that doesn't mean you need to stop working. If you have ideas on Facebook stuff... Email it to me.
Send it in. Yeah.
I'll massage it, and if it looks good, I'll send it upstairs. I don't think that's necessarily something that you guys need to vote on, because, I mean, that's a planning department activity as well as an affordable housing collaborative activity.
Yeah, that's good.
It works.
So long as it's coming through me.
Yes.
Yeah.
We can do it as an official town notice.
Okay. All right, and then what we'll do is for the January meeting, that'll give us plenty of time to read the rules and regulations.
Absolutely, yeah.
We can come in, and the agenda for that day for the January meeting will be
officer election and the discussion will be the ideas, any information we've come up with, and then we can talk about the meeting after that, try and get a contractor or two in if they are willing to come in.
Yeah.
So you can propose that, you know, not only on the, when they use the town, not only do they get the density bonus for the affordable, but you could also, you know, potentially propose that they get a density bonus for more market rates as well. That would make it attractive from for the developer. So, you know, you got 10, you got to build two affordable. You don't have, we'll let you build 14. We'll let you build, you know, 12 affordable. I mean, market rate or something like that, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you could, you know, propose, which is come up with any ideas you can.
Yeah.
Then you can go by the builder, see what they're interested in, and then go to the plan board, see what makes sense,
and what meshes, yeah.
You know, what's beneficial.
All right, well, motion to adjourn.
Wait, did you say there was something else that you were handed? What was that?
No.
Is that something? No?
Yeah, so I just thought you might be interested in this. This is, I should probably pick this up. So, I'm not going to distribute it because it hasn't gone through the planning director yet, and I really can't do that. But anyway, as part of the ARPA funds, we have $400,000 that's been dedicated towards affordable housing. We're going to put the money out there for an application process. And what we want people to do is to approach us with projects that do something above and beyond what the state or local requirements are. So if those requirements are 20% and 25%,
we want 50.
We want 50.
75.
Minimum.
80.
100. Yeah.
So, I mean, what I wrote in here was, we want to see 50% affordable at 80% AMI with a couple of other restrictions. And then I put on there, I said, or equivalent. And my suggestion was in the application process, if you give us more than 50%, maybe you can give us 100%. We'll let you have 100% AMI. If you give a 60% AMI, maybe you can do 20%. You know,
yeah.
I wanted to leave it out there for it to be flexible for them to maybe be a little creative with in how they address the affordability issues.
Do you see the $400,000 going to one building entity, or?
It's not being ruled out.
You were just asking where there's some grant money.
Well, so, right? She would do 100%.
Well.
I don't know if that's even enough, you know? I don't know. But could be.
I got to believe the federal government's going to be coming out with... Is this federal government specifically for this, or is it...
No, this is part of the, what, $9 million in ARPA funding the town got? This is a slice of that that's being going to...
Is this part of the McKee... put $225 million or something aside for affordable housing from the state's money?
That's state ARPA money. This is town ARPA money.
That's not part of the state ARPA money.
No.
I don't know if it was distributed. All of the money they did for affordable housing in the state of Rhode Island, they're building 800 affordable units. Do you know how many are in South County?
No.
Zero.
Of course.
Yeah.
They're all in Providence.
No, every county. The Newport, every other county, not South County. Or Washington County. Every other county.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And why you just weren't a good advocate?
What was that?
We just weren't a good advocate. We didn't advocate for the money enough.
Well, we talk about that a lot. I think there's that. I think that they don't quite understand down here at the Johnny Cake Center, especially we see a lot of different things. And I think we're just so bogged down with what's going on. I don't think there are enough advocates explaining what's going on. They think we just have money down here and that, you know, affordable housing is not as much of an issue as it is other places. I also think that the cost of land is so expensive down here and to build and stuff. I think it's just a lot of developers don't do it because they can't make it work.
Do we have anybody from here that goes to those meetings that can advocate for this town? I mean, I know Kate probably, right? But is there anybody else?
No, that's what, so we've talked with the people in the area. So you have Habitat for Humanity, you have Women's Development Corp. They do a lot of building mm-hmm. down here. We've talked about getting everyone together to try to do some of that stuff, but it's tough.
I've been to quite a few meetings for Homes RI and some of those things, and I had no idea that no one really specifically was an advocate from here that would speak.
I think the cost of land is probably a huge factor in that, because they're going to get a lot more bang for their buck doing something somewhere else.
Yeah. There's also not this land. Isn't, this you know what I mean? Like, there really is not land to build on down here that's for sale. If you have someone who's looking to buy land, you know, a real estate agent or something, going out and trying to find people and reaching out to people, you can find land that way. But just in terms of things being available, there's just not a lot.
But we're 1/3 protected space, which is, you know, that's part of what makes the town great. But it also contributes to the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of landlocks too around here too, so that kind of makes it fun. Yeah.
All right, guys, shall I get a motion to adjourn? Anyone?
I move.
George, motion to adjourn.
I second.
Second. We're adjourned.
All right.
So timeline, we're finishing up applications, because there's also money going out for human services grants at the same time, so I'm working with Luke Murray, the director of administration, so that our applications are available. We're trying to get that coordinated right now, so we wanted to have the applications and whatnot done for the end of October. So
the human services piece, is that, could you potentially get money from both?
Potentially.
If it connected them?
Well, if you used a project that had services, probably.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge thing, that's a big push in affordable housing these days, is actually doing wraparound service-enhanced housing. Because they found that when you do affordable housing, well, just in general, but, you know, if you can have someone who's on site, there's this company, Marathon Development. They're a big builder out of Massachusetts, and they did this place, Rockville Mill, which is out in Hopkinton, and it's all affordable, subsidized, but they have someone from House of Hope, and they have everyone there, and so that it's kind of the people go and they can get all of the services that they need. So it's a big push for affordable housing to get service-enhanced housing with different partners in the community.
Well, that's interesting.
I think the biggest struggle would be pulling together a project concept with all of those moving pieces before the grant monies.
I don't know.
Well, maybe. You know somebody.
How much money do they have?
Housing task force.
Yeah. Now Garrett's going to pull it together.
I was on the housing task force. I understand. Because it was kind of like that time.
It was what?
That conflict of time. The housing task force that they had.
What? For who?
For Rhode Island Housing.
Okay. Well, that's the thing. All this stuff is time, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's
the time it was a conflict of time, and I couldn't manage it.
Yeah.
They have...
You can't manufacture time?
I
can't. All right, so the affordable housing was bumped down from 400 to 375, and the social service grants are, they have 425,000.
425? Mm-hmm. Okay. So 800,000 total. Yeah, okay. All right. Interesting. And they're coming out at the same time?
Yep.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night, Joe.
Happy holidays, Joe.
That's true.
That's right. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody. We'll see you in the new year.
Because we got to start before Halloween, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because I'm not going to see Joe probably until...